I'd like to do a quick preliminaries with you. So meditate and go through the preliminaries once more. Please, by the time you get to Vajrapani, have your own cushion, butt cushion and foot cushion, right? Two of them. And make the investment, okay? They really gyp you in those health food stores. Like $80 or something, but it's worth it, okay? It's your life at stake. So don't be shy. Go out and get one, okay? Before Saturday, okay? And come to Vajrapani with it, all right? I'll say next, and then you do the next. You start the next preliminary, and then I'll say what it is about a minute later. And you can check yourself and see how you're doing. All right? It should become very, very automatic. It should become part of your life every morning that you do that. Okay? Here we go. Next. Which is watching your breath, two or three rounds of 10 to get the mind into neutral. Next. Which is taking refuge, and there's millions of ways to take a refuge. Tonight we'll do thinking about the refuge of the Sangha. The two kinds. One is people who are ordained, which represent the real Sangha, people who've seen emptiness directly. Think about the real Sangha, people who have seen the day of their enlightenment already. They already know when it will be and what it will be like. Next. Next is bodhicitta, and specifically thinking about one person you know who seems to be perpetuating their own pain by reacting to negative things negatively so that more negative things will come to them. And that's what samsara is. That's the definition of samsara. That's how samsara works. And think of a person who is caught in that cycle of misunderstanding the bad things that come to them, responding negatively to those things, and then karmically more bad things must come to them, and then they get to respond again, and it's a cycle. Think of someone who seems to be suffering that way and wish that you could explain to them how to stop it and that they would hear you. Next. Which is to invite a holy being to come and be with you in your meditation. Visualize them as a living being, warm, breathing, moving, blinking, sweet, smelling, warmth of their breath on you. Not just a tanka. Next. And next you pay respect to them and in your mind bow to them, specifically by thinking of one or two of their great qualities. The ones that you can see and the ones that you can't see. Next. Which is to make an offering to them and make it something beautiful, gift like the sky filled with flowers or the ocean at sunset, or the forest or flowers that you like. And the best offering you can make is something specific about your practice, like later on this evening I'll do my book, or I'll think about emptiness for 5 minutes, or during the break I'll be nice to that person I don't like so much. Something like that. Make an offering. Next, think about some negative action you've done in the last day, something negative you said to someone, or something negative you thought about someone, play it back word for word, like a tape recorder, even the thought you had, and just appreciate how gross it is. Next, just rejoice in something good you've done and play it back the same way, and give it honestly equal airtime. Don't be wimpy about this one. Be proud of something you've done well, some small progress you've made, and be specific. Next. Just asking for teaching, either from your lama or the person who irritates you the most. Next. We pray for the long life and of your Dharma teachers and of the friends that help you, whether they're Buddhist or not, the ones that help you stay good, and ask that they stay in your life. I'd like to take just one each time. It's too hard to think about all of them. You just rotate them, you know, concentrate on one. Next. Next, you should be moving around a little. Take this chance to adjust your posture. Blow any boogies you have on. Okay, next. Which is to go back to your breath for two or three rounds. Now focus on the holy being in front of you, and we're going to concentrate on their outline, their silhouette, as if a light was behind them, and all you could see is the outline. Next on the eyes and the eyebrows, eyelids. Next, the rest of the face and the hair. next to arms and the upper body. And the legs and the hands on their lap. In the small movements of their bodies, their eyes blinking, their chest rising with the breath, shifting slightly from side to side, light catching on their jewels and silk on their body. And the slight smell of their body, like some kind of your favorite scent, like a perfume or a flower smell. And the slight warmth of their body, you can feel some little touch of warmth on your face or on your hands. And then feel their mind, their emotions, that intense love for you and care for you. Intense desire to help you. Then ask them to bless you by coming into you, and they start to rise slowly off the ground. And they get smaller and smaller. And as they reach the top of your head, they turn around and face the same way as you. And then you can feel the warmth of them sitting on your head. And they're about 3 inches high, something like 4. Then prepare a place in your heart for them. When the scriptures say heart, in this case, they mean behind your heart, closer to your backbone, a tiny little chamber about the width of a marble, or even a little smaller. And in there, prepare for them a seat, like a beautiful cushion on top of a beautiful flower. And some beautiful light, like golden light. And you can feel the warmth of the light. And then you ask them to come into you and mix their mind with your mind. And they're very, very pleased that you even would have the brains to ask. And they start to come slowly down, straight down, like an elevator shaft right in front of your backbone. And you feel them coming down, the warmth of their body. And by this time they're very small, but they would fit inside of a marble. And then finally you feel their warmth at your, at that place on the level of your heart. And you feel this blessing from them leaking through your body like warm honey or something. And then it reaches your skin and it starts to come out of your skin through the pores like some kind of beautiful light, and light rays all from each of the pores of your body, and they go out and touch people, make them happy, bring them the things they want. They say on the tip of each ray of light, you can visualize, you know, like a Lexus or a Jaguar and a house or a dog or a boyfriend or whatever people want. And then you dedicate that good karma to, I would say, to your own tantric enlightenment in this life. Okay? I think probably the most important thing you could dedicate it to. Okay, take a break. All right. I mean, we'll start now. Okay. We were halfway through the five problems of meditation. First one was lelo, easy to remember, meaning that you just don't feel like meditating. Okay. And I can't emphasize enough that that's the worst of them. And that's the hardest one to overcome. And you already know, if you tried to meditate every day this week, I mean, I won't embarrass you by asking how many people did, okay? But there's always some excuse, you know? There's always some reason why you can't do it. There's always something that has to be done. Those things will... Now, my Lama used to say, they'll kill you, you know? You'll die before you finish the last one. 5 minutes after you die, every single thing you did because you didn't have, you know, every single thing you did when you didn't have time to meditate will be totally meaningless. You know, won't have any effect on you at all. And the meditation would have, but it's too late to go back. And it takes sort of some kind of discipline to go against the whole world, you know. It takes a lot of discipline. It takes a lot of personal discipline to be late for work because you didn't, because your meditation ran over. And I'm not kidding. You know what I mean? We grew up in this Protestant work ethic thing, you know, and it's bad to be late for work. But it's much worse not to meditate. You see what I mean? It's called a nangdom, priorities. Paradox. Like two important things happen at once and you have to choose one, which one you're going to do.
Dilemma.
Yeah. Priority dilemma, nangdom. It's in Vinaya they call it that. And here, just be late for work, okay? And if they threaten to fire you, say, you know, if it happened to me again, I'd do the same thing. So then they fire and you get a job where they don't mind if you're late for work if you meditated. You know what I mean? So then your life is better anyway. Okay, that's all. There is no more important thing. You have to do it, okay? And that's the hardest one to get over. If you keep missing your meditation, then you should really use those four corrections, right? First one being what? Yeah, Deba, meaning understanding what will happen to you if you get really good at meditation. And I went through it the other day, and it's really true. You can, physically, your energy level increases immensely. You don't get sick very often. Very, very infrequently do you get sick. Mentally, you're always bright. You're always excited. You're very, very creative. You see solutions where other people don't see solutions. And I think most importantly, because your mind is straight, you know what's important in life and what's not important in life. And your priorities become different from other people. And that's a benefit of meditation. Then you get to a point where if you're fortunate, you can develop some kinds of, like, light clairvoyance. Like, you can't read the person's thoughts next to you, but you can sense them very, very, you get very sensitive, where you can't understand the words that they're saying. You can do that on Tonglam, right, when you see emptiness directly, after you see emptiness directly, but for a while. But this is like some sort of instinct of what other people are thinking. So all throughout your life, this is useful. You know what I mean? Like, in the diamond business, it's very useful, you know, stuff like that. But just, of course, you're using it to help people, right? And then eventually, if you kept it up, you'd be able to perform miracles. There is a level of meditation where you can change the basic physical properties of an object. You know, you could turn water into something solid and walk on it, for example. According to Buddhism, that's just a side effect of good meditation. That you'd be able to, you could change water into wine or something like that. Okay? You know, you don't even have to reach the path of seeing to do that. You don't have to even see emptiness directly to be able to do that. You have the ability to concentrate on a task. So you're one of those people who can do 20 things at once and you finish them all and you finish them all well. Okay? And anything you undertake, you have this intense ability to concentration you're able to finish it perfectly. When you do a good deed, like, if you're doing like Lama Sopa, building a huge Maitreya statue or something, you're able to focus on it for 10 years if it takes, you know, and do what's necessary at each stage and bring it to its completion and then enjoy its virtue, and everything is perfect. Everything about the action is perfect. You also get much more sensitive to your mind, much more sensitive to your mouth and your actions, and you're able to avoid bad karma very effectively. If you're able to concentrate well, you're able to monitor your own mind and your own behavior closely. So just automatically you're not collecting bad karmas. The whole world begins to change. Tastes begin to taste better. Music begins to sound better. The people around you seem to be getting sweeter. They fixed the West Side Highway. You know, and I'm not kidding. I'm really not kidding. And in all of these things, more parking spaces in Manhattan, stuff like that. And by the way, worldview, if you're a Buddhist, the only way to get more parking spaces in Manhattan is to take care of people who need a place. You see what I mean? That's the only, and if they do make more parking spaces, or if suddenly there's less people driving to Manhattan from New Jersey, it's because of your good karma, and you have created those places by taking care of other people. Seriously, to think that you have to vote a new mayor in, or raise taxes, or change the police, or something like that, has nothing to do with parking spaces. It's your own karma, your own personal karma. If the road to Vajrapani is not doing too well, that's the problem of the people who have to use it. It's their karma, okay? And like that, you start to become very sensitive to those things, and you start to be able to do the right things. And your whole world starts to transform. And you feel physically like you're going backwards, you know? Like, you can dimly remember how things used to smell when you were a kid, or taste when you were a kid, and what music used to sound like when you were 20, and stuff like that. And it starts to come back to you. Okay, this is a concentration. And being able to concentrate on good deeds. Finally, it reaches a point where you see emptiness directly. And during meditation, mental and physical shinjang meaning intense pleasure of meditation. Your mind is, lesa rungwa means your mind is very, very supple, very much like a dancer or something. And then physically, you can sit there for 2-3 hours and it feels great. Okay, you even get a lot of thrills up your spine and stuff like that, okay? And then the bodhisattva vow, of course, is not to mistake that for spiritual progress, okay? Those are side effects. And it's not the goal of meditation to feel like $1 million. It's a side effect, okay? Ultimate goal of meditation, see emptiness directly, see your future lives, see your own enlightenment, get true experiences of bodhicitta, and then go out and help all sentient beings, okay? And that's, those are the benefits. Depa, second one, the second antidote to Lelo. Dumba. I always compare it to being in sixth grade and, you know, you're in the, okay, eighth grade maybe. And if you're a guy, you see this girl in the class, you know. And it's like the second day of class. And Depa means you count her good qualities, you know, like she has the right kind of gum. She's, you know, she's cute, you know, her parents have money, you know, you can go to the movies with her and stuff like that. That's Depa, okay? Dumba means, I'd like to get to go out with her. You know what I mean? Dumba means this kind of aspiration or something. You know what I mean? Dumba means, yeah, I would like that, you know. Now, how am I going to do that? Then you do three. Tumba, which means you undertake the work necessary to get that thing. You know, you find excuses to be behind her in line, and, you know, stuff like that. That's Simba. Fourth one? Shinjang means once you get good at meditation, that physical and mental pleasure of being very good at it. It's like when you run a lot, when you're running regularly, or you're dancing regularly, or you're doing yoga regularly, and it just feels great every time you do it. And then you don't get any more lelo. Why? It's just very, very exciting to meditate. It's like you know it's going to be a good time. And you can't wait to get back to your cushion. You know what I mean? Like you dream about your cushion when you're at work. You know, and you're thinking, boy, I can't wait to get home so I can sit a little bit. You know, and you're making up excuses to sit. You know, then you know you've got shinjang. Okay? So then lelo is destroyed completely. Right? Second problem? Danga. I think it was danga jepa, right? Yeah. Losing the object. Okay, forget the word forget. Okay, the literal translation is forgetting the object, but what it means is losing it. Okay, it's this very stupid feeling you have if you're in a great tantric retreat and you're doing 400,000 Vajragini mantras, and then suddenly you realize that you've been doing the wrong mantra for about half an hour. You know, you know, if you've ever tried it, you know. It's losing the object completely, like totally losing, you know. Like you've been supposed to be meditating on some tantric deity and you're intensely concentrating on what you're going to have for lunch, you know, and you catch yourself, and that's okay. Correction for that is temba, which means what? Bring the mind back. Okay, the literal meaning is remember, okay, or recollection, forget it, doesn't have anything to do with that. It means the action of bringing the mind back to the object. Okay. Third problem. Qingge, yeah. Dullness and agitation, okay. Dullness meaning, the description of dullness is, you can find it out yourself. What meditation feels like when you're sleepy. What it feels like when you have too much food in your stomach. What it feels like when you didn't have enough sleep the night before. That's rough qingwa, obvious qingwa, okay, obvious dullness. And then agitation being, there's a general word called chora, which is distraction. And technically speaking, agitation is only the first type of chora, which is where you are thinking about things that you like. You're distracted to something you enjoy, like food or music, or you start thinking about a song or something like that. Or what I think the most dangerous one in America is thinking about what you're going to do that afternoon at work. For me, that's my worst one. Which brings us to the second one, which is getting distracted by a virtuous object. Okay, like you start thinking about that project that you're doing for Lama Sopa, and you stop focusing on this Buddha image or something. That's called a special kind of chora, where the object is virtuous, but the action of getting distracted to it is wrecking your meditation. So that's a special kind of distraction. And then the worst kind of distraction, or the most destructive one, thinking of somebody you don't like, thinking about something that somebody said to you. And that has a special ability to ruin your meditation for the whole period. You know, if you get sensitive to that, you'll see that just a few seconds of thinking about someone you really don't like, the energy of that, and thinking about some kind of feelings of negativity towards them, it saps your meditation. Your whole meditation period will no longer have any energy for the next hour or something. Okay, so those are the worst three forms of gopa or agitation. Correction for that? Sheshin. Function of sheshin? Watchfulness. It's the motion detector in our, you know? It's a detector that detects that something's wrong. Now we're about to start the fourth problem, right? But notice something in this system of meditation. Who taught it? Kamala Shila, 750 AD, and ultimately comes from the Buddha himself. What was the correction for qingge? Sheshin, right? Which is just detecting its appearance. You see, I mean, it's not stopping qingwa or gopa. Get it? It's very interesting. All you've done is detected it. You haven't stopped it. Okay, so the correction for number three is really just detecting it. See, now you have to do something about it. Okay, so the next problem of meditation is called failing to take any action. Okay. For those of you who can't see, it's D-U-M-I-J-E-P-A. Say du mijepa. Du mijepa. Du jepa is a word that means taking action, doing something about it. Okay? Mi is negative. So du mijepa means, the fourth meditation problem is, after you detect dullness or agitation in your mind, which you can think of as wandering, you don't do anything about it. You know, you just sit there and stay there in that state of dullness. That would be dumichepa. Okay, so the fourth meditation obstacle is just sitting on your butt, literally, right, and not doing anything about it. Okay, like you're aware that the meditation is not going so well, but you just sit there and you know, don't do anything about it. Okay, that's called dumichepa. There are two. Oh, the correction for that. We'll call it the fix for number four. This is really easy, okay? Ready? Yeah. You erase the word me, okay? When you're a carver and you do that because you made a boo-boo, you just stick these little dots in here, okay? And it's called du-jepa. Say du-jepa. Du-jepa. Du-jepa means do something about it, okay? Do something about it. Du-jepa takes two almost opposite forms. Why? Yeah, you have two opposite problems, you know. If you're getting spaced out, it's time to take care of that with one correction. If your mind is wandering around and you're thinking about, you know, what's it going to be for lunch, that takes a different kind of correction. So here we, number four, this correction for number four, which is, I don't know, I think it's correction number six we're up to or something. Seven, right? You should have, this should be the seventh correction. Right? Because number one had four corrections. Basically, that throws the counts off. Okay. Anyway, very debate. Here, the correction is going to split into two, right? Correction for dullness, spacing out, and correction for agitation. Okay? Correction for wandering. So we'll do the corrections for jingwa first. The corrections for spacing out or some kind of dullness. Okay? You could divide them into three. First is like a very subtle corrective action. Subtle. Okay? It takes place in the space of a few seconds in your own mind. Okay? It's like the problem is not too serious. And the whole correction takes place within your mind with a slight adjustment in the intensity of your meditation. Okay? Very slight adjustment. It's called jimba. D-R-I-M-P-A. Say dimba.
Dimba.
Dimba. Dimba means to redouble your concentration. Okay? Turn it up a notch. Turn your concentration. It's like tightening a screw slightly. Okay? Rigpa dim in colloquial Tibetan means... Hey, come on, concentrate. You know, you're driving off the side of the road. You know, like you say it to a driver, you know, Drikpa dim, da kariji yore. What the hell are you doing? Drikpa dim. You know, like, get your mind back on the object. You know, buckle down. Buckle down a bit, okay? And that's the most subtle correction. This is taking place in a few seconds in your mind. You're catching some kind of subtle dullness. The dullness is not so bad yet. And... you're just starting to space out a little bit. You're just getting a little sleepy. You're getting into that warm, fuzzy, useless meditation that I think so many Westerners might be into a lot of the time. It feels good, and it's deadly. It will kill you. You'll end up 5 years later not having any of the benefits I talked about. And it'll be a miracle if you're still meditating 5 years later. You know, so jimba is like, tighten up the intensity a little bit. Get back on the object and tighten the screws a little bit on your mind. Focus in on that object. What does focus mean? What does clarity mean? Again, it doesn't refer to the object, okay? It's your own mental excitement almost. You know, you're just like getting turned on a little bit more about the object. You know, when you hear the books talk about clarity, forget trying to make Jetsun Kapa's nose a little clearer, okay? It's not that. It's tune up your emotion level to where you're like more bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, you see? It's like that the ultimate goal in meditation is to have that intense, satisfying focus that you have with a very good book or a very good movie or a piece of music that you really like. And it's that feeling you get of some kind of almost drug leaking into your mind and you're just like a very turned on by this object and time passes and you're not aware of it. You know, you can read 100 pages more, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you got to get up at 6 to go to work and you don't know where the time went, okay? Or you're into some really good music and your neighbors are banging on the wall, you know, like turn it down and you're not even aware of the banging on the wall because you're just into the music and your mind is sunk into the music. So get a little bit more like that. Turn it up a little bit. Turn it up means that. You know, turn it up means get back into that really fine feeling up towards the object. Okay. I think personally, you know, try to transfer that feeling onto the meditation object, right? Everybody in this room has something that interests them so much that they might stay up all night to experience it, whether it's a movie or certain kinds of music. I have students who knock on my door at 6 a.m. for meditation, and they have not gone to bed because they've been all out all night dancing or something. And for them, this object is so interesting that it's easy to stay up all night. And you have to try to get that emotion about the meditation object. Okay, you have to try to move that emotion to your meditation object. You know, whatever it is that would keep you up all night. Okay, and you know what it is. Okay, it's like the difference between if somebody said, "Here, this is a hammer. Lama Sopa wants you to build a new temple. You know, here's some nails. Bang nails all day." And if you're not really too interested in it, it hurts. And you're like kind of complaining all day. You know, you'd rather be meditating or something. And then somebody gives you a drum and a stick and says, "Beat on that, you know, see if you like it." And you're like into it and you're beating for hours and hours and you don't notice the time has gone. It's the same physical effort. But because you're into the music and you're not into the hammering, see, physically it's the same thing. But there's some difference mentally. And that's the difference between turning the screws up and not turning the screws up. See, it has to become some kind of pleasant thing. The action is the same. You know, if I said, I don't know, you know, watch your favorite movie for 3 hours. You know, there's a really long movie out, a new movie out, but the problem is it's really long, you know. And then you don't have a problem to sit there for 4 hours and stare at it. You really don't have a problem. So you have to try to have that same feeling towards your meditation object, you know. I don't know what it is, but there's some resistance of your mind, and you have to try to overcome it. That's dumbha. Okay, like, tune up the interest level. Okay, that's all. Dumbha. Say, sang. Dumbha. Sang. Dumbha. This is a very rare word in Tibetan. And it means, like when your spirits are down and then something happens to bring your spirits up, that's called sangtupa. Okay? It's like uplifting your spirits or something. So what it means, like sangtupa in colloquial Tibetan can mean to give someone an award, like a medal or something. Sangtak means an award. And the feeling you would get is, you know, they said, "Oh, you've been selected, you know, as the winner." And then you're like, you know, sangtupa, you know. So sangtupa means like some kind of, you've been down and then sangtupa is like, you know, like you come up again. You come up in a big way real fast. That's called sangtupa. Sangtupa is considered the correction for when the chingwa has got pretty bad. You know, like you try dumbha once and you come back for a while and then you go down again and then you try dumbha again and you come back for a while and you go down again. And then if you can't bring yourself up, then sangtupa is correction number two. You see, I mean, it gets more forceful. Things are getting worse in your mind, okay? And it's time to sangtupa. Dumbha didn't work. It didn't work to do that very slight, subtle correction. And you'll get used to this, and you have to meditate to find out what I'm talking about. But dumbha is enough when your mind is slightly down, and you just have to concentrate a little bit, it comes back up to normal level. But if it keeps slipping and keep going down, if dumbha doesn't work anymore, and you know when you're meditating, you know, your head starts nodding and, you know, stuff like that, then you can turn on sangtupa. Sangtupa is like emergency level one, okay? And this is where you actually move the mind to an alternate object for a short time, to bring yourself back up forcefully, and then you go back to the object that you're supposed to be meditating on. So this is like a pretty drastic action. You're like giving up the object purposely for a while just to bring your mind back up, and then you shift back to the object that you were focusing on in the first place. And again, this is not something you want to do unless things are getting really bad. Okay? So like a meditation session is like a war with your own mind. It's like this elephant, right? It's like wrestling with an elephant, literally, in that poster you can see. And And you have to, you know, you have to be like a general who's directing this army against this enemy. And when the time comes for drastic action, you have to take it. That's duchepa. You have to know how to take action when the time comes. So if it's not going well, don't just sit there. Go to drastic action number one. Okay. So here's drastic action. I'll give you them straight from Lamrim Chemo and Namdulakta. He says the very best one is to contemplate on how fortunate you are to have met Buddhism in your life. You know, especially in America, I don't know, 250 million Americans, if Buddhism is the true way to get your rear end out of suffering, and if Buddhism works to not die, you know, if it's actually a method to prevent your own death, if it really works that way, okay, I'm just saying if, okay, if it is the way not to die, and it is, okay, then you are one of a million people who has really connected with it. The virtue required to listen to a Dharma teaching for 1 hour would probably take hundreds of years of work. You see what I mean? Whether you believe it or not, for you to sit here for 1 hour means that you were a really fine person and a really fine practitioner for many, many decades, okay, to hear this, to be here now. You are literally one in a million, okay, just to have gotten this far. And people take it for granted. I had a lady sitting telling me today, oh yeah, I got this initiation from Dingo Kenzin Rinpoche, highest leader of all the Nyingmas, you know. And then I bumped into this Sakya guy and head of the Sakyas, and he taught me something. And I think, oh yeah, and then I had met Ladi Rinpoche, you know, highest Galupa, Haramba Geshe, and he gave me this thing. So, you know, I feel pretty good. Forget it. You're like one in 30 million or something. You know what I mean? Literally. You really are. You know, and Sangthipa at this point means, think about it. You know, what are the odds that poor little youth has bumped into His Holiness, bumped into Lama Sopa, studying Holy Dharma, been exposed to Tantra, which only happens every 10,000 planets or something like that. Like Buddhism reached 10,000 planets, maybe one gets Tantra. Okay? So you're exposed to all those things. You know, you don't think you're a normal person because you ain't at all a normal person. You know, the karma required to maintain this class in your ear for 1 minute is intense. You know, it's years of virtues are being used up as we speak. You know, okay. No, it really is. And that's why lamas are so slippery. You know, because it's very hard to maintain that karma. To maintain the karma of being in the direct presence of Lama Sopa for more than a few minutes is extremely rare, extremely expensive karmically. Because every millisecond, there are 65 karmic actions ripening in every millisecond that you experience Lama Sopa's face directly. You know, you're using up 65 discrete karmas, you know, are going off. Think of it in terms of computers, you know, megabytes. How many megabytes it takes to maintain a picture on the screen? It's exactly like that. Think of each dot on the screen as a discrete action that you did that was good for somebody, and millions of those creates Lama Sepa's face for you for a minute. And it's very difficult. So if you are here, if you have met the Dharma, if you've had the chance to see His Holiness speak or something, you must be someone special. And I'm not exaggerating, I'm not just making this up. If you believe in karma, if you study karma, if you study past lives, you are easily one in a million. You know, and think about it. So that's the first Sangthipa, okay? And it's true. And it's not, I'm not making it up. You know, Pabongka Rinpoche said, don't Sangthipa with all your virtues, because you might not have too many. But at least you're here. You know, at least I made it here, you know, like, I'm not so bad after all. And that's a Sangthipa. That's the first one. The second thing they say to focus on is Guru Yoga, meaning, think about your Lama. You know, fantasize a little bit about serving your Lama. You know, like the ultimate Buddhist relationship. You meet a Lama, you're able to be around them constantly, You're able to interact with them constantly. They are rubbing off on you every few seconds. All of their behavior, all of their speech, all of the way they think is subconsciously seeping into you as you're near them. And fantasize about serving them, being around them, helping them. And the interaction, the holy interaction that's taking place, not even while they're teaching, but just while you're being near them, everything about their form. You know, even if the guy is a lousy lama, okay? If you think it's hard to be a student, think of the karma to be a lama. You see what I mean? Think of the karma it takes to at least have ever been ordained, or the karma it takes to ever have been exposed to enough teachings to teach. That's really intense. You see what I mean? That's like 1 in 20 million or 30 million. And think about, you know, how lucky you are to be in touch with your lamas, to be around them, to be making contact with them, to have them interacting with you. And all of that energy from the lineage, you know, 2,500 years of energy is flowing between you and them all the time. And then think about that, okay? Think about that, you know, you've bumped into this 2,500 year lineage. This lineage is pure. This lineage has not been broken. We're putting text into the computer. You can read the sutra. I told some people today I was in. My lama told me we have to ordain a monk next month. You know, make sure to memorize. You have to memorize the ritual. You cannot read a book. So I have like a 30-second part or 1-minute part. I'm supposed to ask the guy some questions in another room. You know, and I have to memorize it. So then I went on a trip and I forgot to take the book with me, and all I had was the computer. And we had put in some books that were 2,500 years old about monk's vows. And I thought, well, maybe just let me look, because if I show up without knowing it, he's going to kill me. You know, so it'd be very bad, inauspicious on the day of making a new monk that someone died, you know. So, you know, so so I checked the computer. I found the, you know, I remembered one of the words, and it came up, and there was not a single syllable difference. You see, 2,500 years from India into Tibet, the Tibetans were perfect, you know, not a single word difference. You know, I once did Abhidhamma Kosha for 10 years. I wrote out every single Sanskrit and Tibetan word there, and I found one syllable difference, where they just couldn't get it into two syllables. You know what I mean? It was just a thing where there wasn't a word that had two syllables and you needed two syllables, but perfect. And you are part of that lineage. This lineage has not, it's a perfect lineage back to the Buddha. Everything. Amazing. Okay? And think about it and be happy about it. And that's all. That's Tsangtupa. You know, God damn it, you know? I'm in a world where this thing has lasted 2,500 years down to the syllable, you know? And there are still these holy living people walking around, you know, taking jets from, and not ships, you know, from India and teaching us. And this is amazing, you know? This is, I must be something special going on in my life, okay? Third one is to focus on, they say luminosity, okay, in your mind. And what it means is to think of something very, very holy, something sacred, something that makes you happy, okay? Something beautiful, spiritually. I mean, you can think of something you've seen His Holiness do, or anything you've seen some holy person do, and bring it to your mind. It doesn't have to be restricted to Buddhism, you know. You can sit there and appreciate that somebody would give their life for other people or something like that, okay? And that Tsangtupa is some kind of brightness or luminosity, sacred luminosity, okay? Something like that. The last one they gave is think of the good qualities of the Buddha. And this doesn't have to be, you know, trying to figure out how many inches his bump on his head is, or, and then trying to get excited about that, or, which is hard, right? It's not like that. An enlightened being has the ability, without any premeditation, to appear as every person you've ever met in your life, simultaneously. You know? So it's quite possible, and not at all impossible, that every person you've ever met in your life was the emanation of a single enlightened being. No problem. Very easy. They do stuff like that. Okay? And it's like Truman's World. You've got to see that movie, okay? It's exactly like that. I mean, after we saw it, I had like 6 or 7 friends with me, and we came out, and nobody said anything for an hour, you know? And they're just thinking that, yeah, it really could be like that. And you wouldn't know. I mean, it'd take a long time to figure it out. And appreciate and think about the qualities of an enlightened being, you know? They are planning ahead for you for about 1,000,000 years, you know? They've drawn up a blueprint for what's going to happen to you for about the next 1,000,000 years or so. I mean, they're capable of that, and they do that all the time. You know, Lama Sopa is not trying to plan your next 3 weeks. He's planning your next 1,000 lifetimes or something. Every time he says something to you, he's saying it in light of those repercussions. You know, and if you don't get it right now, then don't worry about it, okay? Something like that. Okay. The third correction for dullness. So now you've got a little synced up, just as we spoke, right? I mean, less yawns during the last few minutes. Okay? Like you're considering, wow, maybe he is a Buddha, you know, my Lama Sopa, you know, maybe, yeah, maybe that's true. And then you're already, your heart is like uplifted. That's Tsengtupa. You know, you got a little bit of oomph out of it, okay? This is the colloquial word up here, just so you know. Say Yalang.
Yalang.
Yalang. This is the ultimate drastic corrective action, okay? Like, you tried. This one, by the way, I repeat, Dhamma takes place in a few seconds in your mind. You just, like, bring it back, tune it up, and you're back on track. If you keep dropping, if the mind keeps dropping, then you do Tsengtupa. You actually shift to another object, get turned on, and then shift back to your original object, okay? After you thought about Lama Sopa's amazing qualities for 2 minutes or 3 minutes, or after you thought of the odds against you being exposed to a tantric teaching, which are something like 1 to 10 million, okay? Then go back to your original object, okay? Once your mind gets a little bit up. If all of that fails and you find yourself, you keep nodding off, you keep spacing out, you're just frustrated and the thing isn't working. Yalang means get up off your cushion, okay, and go do something. And he has a list, okay? Go out and get some fresh air, you know. Go out, stick your head in the refrigerator or something. It's cool air, okay? Very often they'll talk about, even in the Tibetan medical scriptures, a lot, the Gyudeshi, the four medical scriptures, they'll say, go out and stare at the sky. Get into some open space. You know, like go up on a mountain, go outside, you know, look at the sky. You know, just go out and refresh yourself by looking at something, some vista, you know, some big thing. This is hard in New York because there's no sky, but, you know, you could take a subway down to John Stilwell's office or something. Third one, he says, is walking, pacing, you know. And that we do that in the monastery when we're memorizing. We pace for like 1 hour or 2 hours. Like you can walk around the monastery, or if you're in a courtyard, it looks like swimmers when they get to a wall and they turn and they kick. And these monks are going like that, and then they get right in front of the wall and they're like that. If you're trying to memorize, this is really, really good for you, okay? If you're trying to memorize a scripture or a sadhana or something like that, it's very, very effective. Rather than sitting on your bed or sitting on a cushion, very difficult to memorize like that. Get up and move and stick the thing out in front of your face and keep memorizing, okay? We do that in New York. Sometimes we go in a circle. Like 30 minutes a day, you can memorize a lot, you know? In about 1 year, you can memorize a lot. You know, in the monastery, they memorize normally a 200 pages as part of the Geshe program. And then it's not hard if you know, if you walk. Okay, so one thing is just to walk. Okay, walk back and forth. Okay. Splash face with water. Okay, by the way, walking could be yoga or dance or whatever. You know that. you know, get your yayas out, get it pumped up a little bit, and then sit back down on your cushion. Okay, so that's the important ending of this drastic method, is get back down on your cushion and keep going. This is considered very drastic and very unusual. You know, normally you shouldn't have to do it much, unless you're not feeling well, or you haven't had any sleep at all, or you had a really big breakfast, or something like that. Okay, we'll take a break there, sangta, and then come back after that. Okay. Okay, walk back and forth, drink something. just to let you know, we just made a deal for a Diamond Cutter Sutra in Ireland in 99, so all you Irishmen.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Okay.
I don't know, we'll figure it out. And Irish women too. Okay. By the way, there's this chart up here. We swiped it from a temple, a Mongolian temple. It had fungus all over it, and some people cleaned it up. I'd like to thank them. That's Kinzom, who's very shy, and she won't even look up. And Patricia Weil, where is she? Okay, and they, between them, are paying for it, and they're going to give everybody a copy. Orla, you have to make this a little bigger, okay? This thing across, where is she? Across the top, okay? Like tonight. And they're going to, and then we translate the whole thing today. In between appointments, sometimes during appointments, I apologize to those people. Everything down here has a number, and then they've put numbers here of what's happening. And I had this idea to, like, we'll have it ready by Saturday morning class, and then everybody bring $10, and we'll put it in a pot, and we'll donate it to Land of Medicine Buddha, okay? So, how's that? Yeah. Okay. Okay. And all you fat cats have to throw in more, okay? Not many of you, but I know. Okay. We finished the fixes for Chinwa, so now we need the fixes for Gupa. Okay, agitation. Typical forms of agitation. You know, thinking about what you have to do this afternoon, thinking about what you're going to wear to work, thinking about the last fight you had with your friend. You know, stuff like that. And here's how to stop it. Okay. Again, we're going to have 2 second corrections that you make in the middle of a thought. You know what I mean? And by 2 thoughts later, you're back on track. Though, like a subtle correction in the mind. And then we're going to have a medium drastic correction, and then we're going to have a drastic correction. Okay. So here's the subtle correction. Say sluba. 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 Sluba means, this is very interesting, the correction for agitation is, especially in a subtle form, a 2 second correction is, sluba means back off, lighten up, loosen up. Okay? I mean, you would think that it should be, you know, kick ass and get back on the object or something like that. And it's not. It's like, back off a little bit, loosen up. And then gently move your mind back to the object. Okay, I mean? See what I mean? So it's a typical reaction here might be to try to beat yourself up or tighten up or something like that. And that's supposed to be the wrong thing to do. Okay? Instead, you kind of lightly back off. You relax a bit. Relax mentally. And then come back softly to the correct object. So it's not like you're wringing your own neck or something. You know, you're like, just you become Shaishin detects that you are thinking about munch, and then you softly bring the mind out, relax, take it off focus, and then gently come back to the object that you're supposed to be on. Okay, in a very gentle way, a very organic way, a gentle way. Okay, and you relax, you loosen up, and you bring it back to the object. Okay, that's that takes place in a few seconds in your mind, and you know if you try to meditate, the best way to get back on the object is loosen up, relax just a touch, let it fade, that wrong object, and then come back to the one that you're supposed to be on. Okay, and don't, like, you know, take your neck and come on, you know, not like that. It's very subtle and very effective. Very gently come back to the other object. Loosen out, come back. Okay. Yeah.
In the last room where you said you would stop before we took the break, you said you would stop and get up and do something.
Yeah.
When you came back, would you just go directly back to the object, or would it be a whole different session?
She asked after the... At the end of the, before we took the break, we were talking about drastic action, you know, get up, go, splash your face with cold water, something like that. By the way, it might be appropriate to go rest for half an hour, you see what I mean? Just go take a nap for half an hour. If you didn't sleep enough the night before, I can tell you, definitely, no matter what you do, it's not going to work. You need to rest, you need to sleep. You can't meditate on no sleep. And if you find yourself not sleeping in meditation, it's a very bad sign, and you have to stop immediately and get some sleep. And I even tell my students, take sleeping pills with them on retreat. I have never taken a sleeping pill in my life, but I always take them with me, you know what I mean? And I've had students with me on retreat where they couldn't sleep. You have to immediately do something about it, you know, and give them, don't be shy, take one, drink a lot of milk, eat this huge popcorn, something oily, and go straight to bed and don't wake up till the next morning, you know, and you have to do that. It's very important. If you get to a point in meditation where you can't sleep, you must take action immediately, okay? So she asked, what do you do when you get back? You sit down on your seat, then you go back through the preliminary of the breath, okay? You cannot go from taking a cold shower to seeing Lama Sopa's face again. You see what I mean? You need to get back into it gradually. So you get down on your cushion, and you do, I would do like 4 or 5 rounds of 10 breaths or something like that. And then you slowly come back to the original object, okay, that you were concentrating on. Okay. Say poa.
Poa.
This is not the poa that means transference of consciousness or something like that, okay? No connection, nothing to do with it. They both mean to move. Like, shakpogore means... I don't like my room in the monastery, I'm going to go move to another one. You know, poa means literally to move to a different room or something. In this case, it means, again, to move to a different meditation object briefly in order to get your mind calmed down a little bit, to get your mind back on track, back on focus. The other correction, huba, takes a few seconds in your mind, and then you're back on track. But if the problem is more chronic, and you find that no matter how much you try, your mind keeps wandering, okay, then you have to do poa. Poa is like temporarily, like for a few minutes, shift the mind to a new object, okay. Here you need an object that's going to bring your mind back to some kind of a serious state, you know. It's the opposite of the other one. The other one, you're trying to sangtupa, you're trying to cheer things up. Here you're trying to bring the mind down, okay? And you could do a brief death meditation, all right? Seriously, okay? Like, you're trying to stop thinking about your job, and stop thinking about that girl you met yesterday at the store, and stop thinking about what's for lunch. And it's very effective to, you know, think about your death, and think about people who have died around you, you know? Especially if someone in your family has died or something like that, focus on them, think about them, think about how you could soon be in the same state. And then you get more serious. You know, you stop thinking about lunch. Okay, I was on a plane once going to Chicago, and they circled and circled. And everybody was laughing and complaining about the movie and complaining about the food and blah, blah, blah. And then they started to go, and then the stewardess comes out of the back and she's crying. And she's shaking. And we're like, oh boy, something's going on, you know. And then the pilot gets on and says, we can't get the landing gear down. So we're going to fly around for an hour and use up the fuel so that when we crash, you don't all burn to death, you know. And suddenly, no one's complaining about the meals. No one's worried about the movie, you know. And everyone's treating each other nice, you know. And that's a sempoa, you see what I mean? Like all this frivolity of people on an airplane is suddenly disappeared with one announcement over the loudspeaker, and everyone is dead serious, you know, about their life. People are writing letters to their family, maybe it will survive, you know what I mean? And the whole feeling of the plane changed, and that's a brings your mind down. Okay, that's a, by the way, the landing gear did come down and we landed okay, as you can tell. But it brings your mind down like that. Okay, it immediately stops you from worrying about what's for lunch or that girl at work said that thing to me. Come on, you're going to be rotting in the ground, you know. You don't have to worry about what she said to you, okay. And that brings your mind down, okay. You can also meditate about the three kinds of suffering, you know. The worst one being, I mean, the first one is called the suffering of suffering, okay. And in Scripture, they give it's the only place that I can remember in Scripture where the word headache comes. And that's the example. I mean, apparently people had migraines in 2,500 years ago. And that was the example of overt suffering. Okay. And then there's the suffering of change. I was meeting somebody, I was talking to somebody, and they said, yeah, I had this old samsaric relationship happened again to me. I met the guy. It was very exciting. It was brand new. Everything was golden. Then it went through this maturing stage where I got to know him and he got to know me and we all went well for a couple of weeks. And then it went into the inevitable degeneration stage where he starts wanting to control my life and I start wanting to control his life. And then it all collapsed and then finally we dumped each other. And it was a typical samsaric relationship, you know. And that's the nature of relationships. As long as your mind is not pure yet, the minute your mind got pure, they wouldn't go like that anymore. You see what I mean? The minute you cleaned up your karma, if you were keeping your book well, an indication that you're close to getting out of samsara would be that those relationships wouldn't go like that anymore. It's very interesting. You know, it's not impossible to have a good relationship. An arhat could have a good relationship. You see? But if you have mental afflictions, you can't have a good relationship. So they must change. So as long as you're in samsara, and as long as the good karma you're collecting is what we call dirty good karma, which means good karma collected without an understanding of emptiness, then every relationship you ever have, which is a result of good karma, will degenerate, and you'll lose it. Okay, and that's just the way it goes. That's the suffering of change. The nature of all good karma that you and I have ever collected without understanding emptiness is that it must collapse at the end. And that's the suffering of change. Okay, and just to think about that, there isn't a single good thing that you can list about your life, your physical appearance, your intelligence, your relationships, the things you own, the people you know. Everything that's going right will go wrong. Because that's the nature of that kind of karma. That's called dirty good, sakche gewele in the Abhidharma. And it must degenerate. And you must lose every good thing in your life. Everything. Okay, that's the suffering of change. And if your mind is, again, if your mind is like getting distracted by, you know, what kind of Doritos do you want for lunch? Then think about the suffering of change. That there's nothing about you physically, mentally, emotionally, and no possession that you have which will not be ripped away from you by just plain old time. Okay. Then the suffering of suffering, I'm sorry, what they call pervasive suffering, the third one. is specifically the fact that your world is a creation of karma, of those kinds of karma, and you must get old and die. Okay? You must get, I mean, unless you do some extraordinary tantric practice, unless you succeed in these classes, seriously, I'm not kidding, it's the whole goal of these classes, then you must get old and die. Okay? And that's, those are the three sufferings. That brings your mind down, back to reality. You know, come on, don't worry about what the guy said at work. Don't worry about what we're having for lunch. We got more serious stuff going on here. And then your mind comes down. Okay? Then you bring it back to the original object of meditation. Okay? Third one. Good old UK. I mean UK. Okay. UK. Okay. Say UK. UK. What's UK mean? Yeah, go back to your breath. This is if things get desperate. Alright? You thought about your death and nothing happened. You know, you're still thinking about lunch. And, you know, you tried to relax the mind and nothing happened, you know. So, if it gets really desperate, then go back to your breath. Okay, go back to counting your breath again. And that's like starting all over. Okay, that's always the starting point in meditation. Never sit down to meditate without going through a good breath meditation. And never do a breath meditation for the rest of your life. Okay, that's a mistake. All right? And do, when you get to Tantra, do breath meditation. That's a different thing. And that's a different kind of breath meditation. That's a whole different story. Okay? Okay, problem number what? We're done with that. Yeah, the last problem, then you get to go home. Okay? It's a D-U, J-E-P-A. My Lama repeats Tibetan all class, 5,000 hours of classes in the last 25 years. We counted it up. And then he'll say, okie dokie, and the whole class is like, okie dokie. Say, du chepa. Du chepa. Du chepa means taking action becomes an obstacle. You see, taking action when you don't have to take action. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Okay? If your meditation is going well, don't start examining your meditation. Okay? And don't start taking corrective actions when there's no problem. When the meditation is on cruise control and it's really going well, and this is a very, very subtle obstacle. Okay? This doesn't happen until you're pretty good at meditating. Then don't start checking the meditation and don't start interrupting the meditation with some kind of correction that doesn't need to be corrected. You see what I mean? And this is kind of, you just have to meditate to know. You know, but it's like you're very sweetly on the object, your back is feeling good, your knees feel good, your brain feels good, the breath is smooth. And then, for goodness sake, leave it alone, okay? And don't fool around with it, okay? Add the correction. Oh, we'll just add a me here. And we'll add a me here. I'm sorry. Scratch that. That's not correct, okay? Just scratch that. Last thing I did. It's cute, but it's wrong. Okay. There's a word for this, correct? No, the problem is correct. The correction is not correct. Okay. This is the correction. Sorry. The English letters here are T-A-N-G, N-Y-O-M, S-U, S-H-A-K. C. Say Dang Yom
Su
Shot.
Dang Yom
Su
Shot.
Dang Yom Su Shot means leave it alone. Okay? If you're studying Tibetan, there's three kinds of Dang Yom. Dang Yom can mean an action which is neither virtuous nor non-virtuous, like picking your nose or something, okay? Seme Dang Yom means the immeasurable, one of the four immeasurables, where you have equanimity towards all living beings, okay? Tsorwa Dang Yom means you don't feel good or bad, you just feel in between. So that's all the senses of Dang Yom. In the study of meditation, Dang Yom means leave it alone. Okay? Even in modern colloquial Tibetan, they say, that Dang Yom is a chagre da, which means, you know, don't fool around with it, don't mess around with it, just leave it. Okay? Don't worry about it. Okay? That's Dang Yom. Okay? So the final correction, number 8, I hope. Am I right? It's to leave it alone. Okay? And that's when your meditation is really going sweet. I think the temptation here for most Americans, including myself, and I'm speaking from personal experience, when I finally get to a good meditation, the final enemy is that I'm worrying about I have to go somewhere. You see what I mean? Like, it takes me half an hour to get to this sweet meditation, and then I'm there. And then I think the final obstacle is like wondering if it's 9 o'clock yet. You know what I mean? And that would be a kind of taking action where you don't have to take action. Leave it alone. Be late for work. It's okay. This is more important. And if it's going well, then stay with it for a while. And don't worry if you ran over your allotted meditation time. If it's going well, for goodness sake, enjoy it for a while. It's so rare, right? And sit with it and stay with it. And see how far you can go with it. Okay? We'll stop there. And then Saturday we'll get to the 9 mental states and 4 kinds of focus, 4 modes of focus that are involved here. I think this is the last night at LMB, and I just wanted to thank all the people at LMB. I know that we brought a big army from New York, and we probably caused you some headaches and cost you some moolah too, because not everybody paid the whole thing. And by the way, New Yorkers should do what we agreed to do about the food, okay? Tonight. And I just wanted to thank you for that. And also, it's a very sweet place to teach. It's I think the first class we ever did here, like 7 people came, you know. And it was fun because the people here are well trained. You have very good lamas. You have very fine lamas. You have the cream of. I don't know how that happened, actually. I mean, they don't come to New York that often. I mean, it's they always come to LMB and Vajrapani. I don't know why. But you've had the greatest lamas in the world have been hanging around here for 25 years, and you're very fortunate that way. And it's a blessing of Lama Yeshe that this place is here and Lama Sipa. You're very blessed to have two lineage lamas like that. And it just feels really good to be here, and thank you for that. And I know it's a lot of work. I mean, Perillo did the Heart Sutra twice. It's a lot of money, a lot of hassle, a lot of headaches. Somebody always goes crazy. You know, and I know that. And I know a lot of work, and it was transparent, and it was very pleasant here. So I'd like to thank those people here. Okay, we'll do some prayers. Okay.
teachers teaching true paths to enlightenment at any time and in any place, Chabang, especially Lama Tsitsun Soko Rinpoche, Lama Opa Rinpoche, Geshe Michael Roach, and Tony Dalai Lama. May all their wishes be fulfilled. And may please return again and again to the
Oh, I'd like to. Also, I had a talk with Lama Sopa yesterday, Rinpoche, and I said, "How are you doing?" And he said, "I don't know. My blood pressure is like perfect, you know, and my sugar levels have gone to like excellent, and my students are all happy, and cooperating with each other, and everything's going wonderful, you know." And I had a feeling he was saying that. Because of the great feeling between all his students, that his health was getting better and better. So seems like that. And so I encourage you also to do your book. You know, that like every 2 hours you're checking it, and if you have a mental affliction attack, it never gets more than 2 hours old. You know what I mean? And it's very powerful. It is tunduk. It is succession yoga of all tantric initiations. That is the whole point of that. And then when if you happen to die in between two entries, which will happen, well, I hope not, but you're clean, your mind is clean, and everything goes well. We're going to talk about how to do that book on Sunday, okay, if you don't know how to do that. And I think there'll be a refuge ceremony. Elizabeth, when is that? No, make a time. You have an idea? Sometime on Sunday. Okay. Sunday afternoon? Well, Sunday sometime at Vajrapani. Okay. And the way I like to do it is to really go into the vows and the commitments. There's 12 commitments. I like to, you know, go through them very, very thoroughly. It might take an hour and a half to go through them. And then that ceremony takes like 10 minutes. But to me, it's knowing the commitments that is the refuge, okay? And it's very fun. So, if you took it once already, you cannot take it again. That's a rule of Vinaya. But you're welcome to come and see those guys get theirs, okay, if you want. All right? All right. Huh? Absolutely. You're absolutely welcome to come. And I like it because it's like cheering them, you know, the people who do it, okay? All right.